music lovers. Welcome to Season 2 of Wax Chatty with D-Muck and Daddy, where three pals listen to an album, then come together and discuss the dang thing.
Yo, Taddy, what the heck is an album?
Well, Muck, an album is a collection of audio recordings issued on compact disc, vinyl, audio tape, or another medium such as digital distribution.
Nice!
Right!
All of our selections can be found on either Apple Music, Spotify, Discogs, or YouTube. Heck, even in your local record store if you fancy doing some crate digging.
Support your local record store, D. That's right. You know, we had such an absolute blast sharing our blinding brilliance with you all in Season 1
that we figured let's keep the groovy going into Season 2.
Yahoo!
Heavens to Murgatroyd, even.
So come and get on the bus with us!
Again!
While we wax lyrical about wax.
Let's grip it and rip it, my peoples.
What's happening? What's happening? And welcome back to Wax Chatty with D, Muck, and Daddy. I'm here with my two brothers from other mothers, Taddy and Muckety Moo. And of course,
and here we are for Season 2.
Hey, that rhymed.
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in there, D. I just had to.
I love it.
It was good. You picked up the line.
It's my understanding that Monsieur Tatino, Tate.
That's me.
I believe the pick was yours, my dear.
It was indeed. And I picked an album by a man named Terry Reed. It is a self-titled album. It's his second album. It's called Terry Reed.
The U.S. name was Move Over for Terry Reed.
So let me tell you briefly why I picked this. I was following some rabbit holes about Tommy Stinson, who is a founding member of The Replacements.
I'm sorry, that just sounded like I was going down these, I was on this rabid hole.
Yes, it was. It was a rabbit hole that I was rabidly holing?
Yes.
Anybody want to play cornhole?
Oh, yes, 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 but was it waxed?
Right, nice.
And we're back.
And it was a thing where he said, my 10 albums that are the most influential and inspiring for me in my life, and one of them was this album, Terry Reed. And I had never heard of Terry Reed. I didn't know who it was, so I listened to it. And then when I did listen to it, I thought, I'm gonna pick this. I did learn that Terry Reed was pretty much, should I say, forgotten or underappreciated, or not many people have heard of him.
He's still alive.
Yes. Oh yes, he's still alive and working. He was born near Cambridge in England on November 13th, 1949. He's 74 years old. His dad bought him a guitar when he was 12. He practiced enough, and his dad bought him an electric guitar when he was 14. He started writing songs, and he became a professional musician at age 15 and started touring England with a band that I'd never heard of, Peter Jay and the Jaywalkers. They had a couple of minor hits, and when he joined the Jaywalkers, started to do they were instrumental, and they got him because he could sing, and he has quite the voice. Peter Jay and the Jaywalkers backed up the Stones for their UK tour in 1966. On that tour, backing up was Ike and Tina Turner and the Yardbirds. He did say, for a 17-18 year old kid doing that, being and seeing what he saw was probably not such a good idea for a young man. Screaming women, drugs, everything. You know, he said he was kind of frightened, actually. They're getting a little bit more traction. And then for whatever reason, Peter Jay decides to not do the band anymore. This is a theme that will follow with poor Terry Reed. So he gets a band together and makes his first album, which is called Bang Bang, You're Terry Reed. It's a trio. These two albums, that one we'll talk about in this first one, it was just three guys. The song on that first album, Without Expression, was written by Terry when he was only 14 years old. It's been covered by The Hollies, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and also REO's Speedwagon. In 1968, he came to the United States. This was Cream's final tour, and also played some dates where he was alone, or the band, I'm sorry, the band was alone. And he started to get some traction. He started to get some renown. Went back to England and made this album in 1969. Keith Webb plays drums, and Peter Shelley plays organ on this record.
Peter Kelly actually died earlier this year. And Keith Webb, they called him the Baron. Frank Zappa apparently called him Octopus, referencing his drumming.
Yeah, and I guess he was in Stevie Ray Vaughan's band at one point.
Right.
So they finished the album. The producer, who was a big name back then, a guy by the name of Mickey Most, says, yeah, they're going to go on tour. Don't worry, go. I'll wait for you guys to come back and we'll finish, do all the post-production of this album. And when he goes on this tour in 1969, it is the rather famous or infamous Rolling Stones tour.
You're in 69 right now, right?
So right, yes, correct.
In 1968, there was a quote from Aretha Franklin saying, there are three things happening in England, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, and Terry Reid.
That's great. That's just great.
Brilliant. And the fact that we, Deanna, I don't know about you, but I didn't know about him either.
I didn't. I did not know about him at all.
So first of all, great pick.
Yeah.
Because the three of us were clueless. That's cool.
Totally.
That's like huge props to the beginning of season two. We's being learned.
Right? Right? And that's part, And that's part of what all this is, right? It's like—
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is perfect.
And since we're in that era, Jeff Beck said he's the biggest thing to happen since the Beatles. Amazing.
Crazy. And around this time, because he goes on this tour with the Rolling Stones, the event that unfortunately Terry Reid is most known for takes place.
The Yardbirds had split up. Jimmy Page is jonesing to put a new band together. And he asked Terry to come be the lead singer for something he's putting together. He doesn't know what he's going to call it. He's thinking of calling it the New Yardbirds. It's like Jerry Garcia dies. It's the new Grateful Dead. I mean, I thought they actually did pretty good with the other ones. I thought that was very
cool. Yeah.
I like that. Anyway, the New Yardbirds. So Jimmy calls up Terry and says, you know, I want to put a band together and I want to do it now. Terry says he had already signed a contract or said yes to going out on the road with the Stones and alternatively with Cream, which is Eric Clapton and Ginger Baker. And I forget the other person in the band.
Jack Bruce.
Nice.
Jimmy's like, well, I can't do this. I want to do it now. 6 months isn't going to cut it. I got to start working on stuff because I got to start working on stuff. And Terry goes, well, I got a guy. I'm going to call up my pal Robert Plant and see if he can get his pal John Bonham in on that as well. And that band was called the New Yardbirds. And they, that turned into be one of the biggest rock and roll bands in history, Led Zeppelin. What's interesting that I found from reading interviews and watching a documentary or two, and people are always like, could you imagine if Terry Reid was in Led Zeppelin and not Robert Plant? It's like, they would go head to head, Jimmy and Terry, because they were both the creative force and they would have disbanded probably.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I can only imagine what it's like for him to get interviewed and have reporters ask for the millionth time, what would have been different in your life had you said yes to Jimmy Page, you know, or any other number of questions as to why he isn't as famous, he isn't, you know, the one that got in or whatever. But things have a way of working out the way that they do sometimes, whether it's stuff that commitments in life that we made that, you know, he had the Rolling Stones and the Cream and all that. And that's why he said no. Somebody else, it might be that they'd get in their own way or whatever. And you never know in people's lives. But also, he's a guitarist and he's a vocalist and he likes to write music. So that would have been, just like you said, Mac, like I envisioned that too. Like, no, that wouldn't have worked. They would have done maybe one album, maybe two, and then had to take separate limos to their concerts so they wouldn't have to talk to each other. Like,
no, Jimmy, you're smoking heroin the incorrect way. This is how you, oh, wait.
It's interesting how ego, and I'm not, this is nothing, I don't know anything about this man, but just imagining sometimes musicians, actors, any artists, how sometimes that ego can get in the way of the creative flow. That said, I mean, I love Led Zeppelin the way it is, but it would be nice to imagine an alternate universe.
It wouldn't have been Led Zeppelin.
No, it wouldn't have been.
When they went off on this tour with Stones and Cream, Mickey Most broke the promise and did remix this album that we're talking about. Terry was very upset and hurt and reacted. And Mickey Most sounds like he was kind of just like, hey, kid, I'm the boss. And, you know, 18-year-old rock and roller goes, no, you're not. Turns out, unfortunately, Mickey Most seems like he was maybe a bit of a vindictive jerkhead.
Oh, a jerkhead. Oh.
Because of this split, Terry Reid couldn't record any music and was in litigation for 4 years with Mickey Most. He did go on tour. He did do a lot of things. He played the first Glastonbury. He played Isle of Wight. He hooked up with David Lindley, and they had a great band. There's a live recording of the Isle of Wight that's supposed to be fabulous. So he was working, and he was, you know, making some money touring, but he couldn't record.
You know, that Glastonbury album that they recorded that Terry's on, the first track is Dark Star by the Grateful Dead.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And so for years, I've been trying to find this album, and it's a fortune to find it. I think it's a double album. So digging into Terry Reid and Glastonbury and finding all this stuff, the Dead never played. It's a recording from London when they were at Europe 72 that they put on the Glastonbury album. I was like, oh my God, I don't want to buy this album. Isn't that nuts? Isn't that crazy? I do love the story. He was asked to play at Mick and Bianca Jagger's wedding. It's May 1971, and Ian Stewart, who was one of the co-founders of the Rolling Stones, and they actually pushed him out because I forget who it was who pushed him out, but they were like, he didn't fit the mold. And so he was good friends with Stu. Mick wanted Terry to play at the wedding in Saint-Tropez. Stu takes care of everything. Terry just has to turn up at the airport. There's like 80 people. Everyone's got shades on. Everyone trying not to look famous. And they're loading crates of champagne into the plane. And so Terry asks Eric Clapton if that was for the wedding. He goes, no, this is just for the plane journey and the bus ride on the other end. And he goes, I don't remember anything after that except for the biggest hangover. It's a great story.
That is good. He records an album called River.
River. How come you're always talking about songs with river in it? Didn't we figure this out last season? Yeah.
What the fuck?
That's great. This is the third time.
Yeah.
Is it the third time?
Yeah.
So in 1973, the litigation is finally resolved and Terry Reid can record. And he works with the famous producer,
Ahmet Ertegun from Atlantic.
River is the name of that album. And it comes out. Things go sideways and the album gets released, but they never push it. It doesn't go anywhere.
Didn't they release that only in the United States?
Or oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
Is that the album?
Yeah.
Why the hell would they do that?
And during that time, he did have a really great band with David Lindley and some other guys that are pretty famous. And those guys went, well, we can't wait around for this. David Lindley goes, plays with Jackson Browne. And so then here he is, Terry Reid, high and dry again, without a record contract and without a band. Then in 1976, Graham Nash says, okay, you've got stuff, because Terry Reid's living in Los Angeles, hanging out in LA, living in Bob Dylan's house, supposedly, and he's just constantly writing. So he has this material. Graham Nash says, get your shit together, let's make a record. Graham Nash produces it, and some people think that the 1976 Rogue Waves is one of his best albums. I have not listened to that yet. He's on tour, and he tells the story that he's trying to call Capitol. They're not getting any any response. So he goes to LA and goes to the Capitol building, and there's on the front door, it says, Capitol has merged with EMI. And again, this album that was pretty great just doesn't go anywhere.
So Terry Reid has a famous quote, and he says, my albums were never released. They escaped.
Oh,
there's a documentary coming out about him, and I found the trailer, and I saw all these quotes in the trailer, and I put him down, and you know, so I'm stopping when writing all these down, and then the Aretha Franklin, the Jeff Beck, the Terry Reid, and I thought it was great. I can't remember when it's coming out or if it's done or anything, so I'm looking forward to seeing it when it.
Yes.
When
I would love to see that.
So Mickey screws him over, and then Ahmet screws him over. He gave him some dough and tore up his contract, and he went to be Tony Duquette's caretaker of his property. Tony Duquette did sets and wardrobe in Hollywood. And if you don't know who Tony Duquette is, his interiors are amazeballs. I used to have two of his monographs when I used to punch a time clock for a celebrity architect, and we would reference them. It is like high Regency, fantastical interiors, Tony Duquette stuff. So I like that, kind of like that story, but I don't know, I couldn't remember what year that was. So the thing of him living at Dylan's, I think might be part of this, because he just stopped doing everything.
Yes.
For I don't know how many years. Anyway, have we talked about the album yet?
Right.
So I think that's like everyone crashed at Dylan's house for a while. Like,
What's a great story about Dylan that he stole some records from somebody and never gave them back, and they were all blues records or something like that? Or it was like Woody Guthrie. And he stole albums from one of Woody Guthrie's friends, and it was in a documentary somewhere, and they're like, yeah, never got those albums back from him. Dylan stole them.
Bastard.
For this album, he was 20 when he recorded this. 1920. And to have that, and Taddy, you and I have talked about this, to have that sound, that feeling, that I don't know what it's called, at 20 is unreal. It was like everybody peaked early in the 60s. It was just amazing to me that the feelings would come out of a 20-year-old like this.
Right.
It's wild to me. Apparently on the back sleeve of the album, Move Over for Terry Reid, it says file under popular, colon, yes, male vocal. That cracked me up.
Yeah. I do think that you're talking specifically when you just said that you're talking about his vocals, and that how could a 20-year-old sound like this? But here's something, old man. Me, old man. He'd only been playing guitar for 8 years at that point. These people's imagination and ability, and quite honestly, you know,
these young peoples,
I don't know how they do it.
Kids these days, they get so smart and have all these feelings deep inside.
These dang peoples. All right, that was a lot of information. Good stuff. We're excited to be with each other again, talking about music.
I know. I'm so happy to see you guys. I love it. Track Talk.
Track Talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Track Talk. Chica-chica. I think I'm up first, right?
I believe that is correct, sir.
Okay. Well, Terry Reid was actually referred to as Super Lungs. That was his nickname. And the first track off this album is Super Lungs, My Supergirl. It's actually a Donovan Leitch song, Donovan. It runs at about 4:17. It's a great opener. And the bass in it is just boss. I actually like it better than the Donovan cut, which was released in August of 69. I don't really know when this album that we're talking about was released. It says August of 69, but I couldn't really find that anywhere. The only thing I figured out was that it made its Billboard peak in November of 69. So I'm kind of like, who did it first? Did Donovan do it first, or did Terry Reid do it first? I don't know. But this song was released off of Baraba Jagal. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Baraba Jagal, which is the Donovan album. It's a song about a 14-year-old girl getting high. She knows how to smoke. She's super cool, and that's what the song is about. It's great. It's a great opener.
I can't figure out, is she a groupie too?
You know, it's funny you say that, because Terry Reid is featured in a movie called Groupie, and so I started watching it. It's like from 1970. It features Terry Reid 10 years after Joe Cocker. I started watching it while I was at the office yesterday.
And of course, rock and roll at the office does not fit. And 10 minutes into it, bang, bang, titties on the screen. Titties, not safe for work. I mean, I got to go back and watch it. It was on Vimeo, but it's on a lot of different platforms. So I don't know if she was a groupie. I figured she was in high school because I felt like they were talking about the teachers and the teachers never messed with her. So I don't know, but I see where you're going with this. You're going outside of the high school into, was she a groupie that would follow him or something?
Then again, he was a teenager. Just seems like that would actually make sense.
My Supergirl, she's super cool.
I don't think that he had the nickname yet. You know, one thing that led to the nickname was his vocals, which are just, wow.
It's that, like, was the first thing I thought when I started listening, like you said, didn't know anything about, and I heard the voice. And then, of course, you know, I'm reading about him and everything, but actually listening to his voice, it's just amazing. The same way, though, how I feel, I'm sorry to compare him to Robert Plant. They're different people. But with certain songs, when I hear Robert Plant sing, because I love Led Zeppelin, that voice, or any number of musicians that have, you know, those amazing pipes.
Funny you say that. I didn't really hear Robert Plant at all. I heard Rod Stewart, early Rod Stewart.
I hear that.
I didn't hear, I kind of made a point in my head not to hear Robert Plant. I heard the Jimmy Page aspect of the music, kind of.
Yes. Yes.
But I didn't hear Robert Plant. Robert Plant's a different singer, but I really heard Rod Stewart and a little bit of Joe Cocker, actually.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And Tina Turner.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Why not? Totally. It was a Tina Turner when she was beaten by Ike, or was it Tina Turner when she was liberated? I think it was when she was being beaten. It's like yeah. Michael Jackson. I love his music when he's being abused, not when he was abusing.
Oh, God.
And let's take a break. Oh, geez.
Too much.
I think that was perfect.
Good thing we're not popular, because we'd probably get canceled.
All right, so the next song, Silver White Light, you got a lot of really fun organ. It's got a lot of that 60s, 70s vibe to it. And a song about not appreciating the beauty of what's right in front of you, with nature as an example. And I was listening to this while walking in the park the other day, when the leaves are starting to turn colors, because right now it's fall, and the sheer beauty of it all. And I remember how my mom used to point out the trees to me when we would take car rides going up to Woodstock when I was a kid. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I would put my headphones back on when I was listening to my Walkman, because dinosaurs did roam the earth back then. Now I can appreciate it. The nature and the beauty of it all. It's an important song because nowadays everyone's head is in their phones. But going back to what you just were talking about, Mac, is
Michael Jackson?
Yes, Michael Jackson and touching it. No, I'm what no,
nobody blows bubbles.
Only me. When you were talking about how this young kid is having such big thoughts, but really, though, he's so deep. There's a lot of thought process going on here for someone who's so young, and how they grew up so fast. Because nowadays, it seems like there's more of that, too. People are, oh, the nature and this and that. But still, nobody seems to really be thinking about things, and even just something like this. So it's funny that you mentioned that, because that's how I was approaching it. I love the song. I dig it. It's got a great vibe to it. I enjoyed it.
He's talking about the moon, right? That's what I thought it was. I thought he was totally talking about the silver white light that I'm underneath, and it was the moon.
I was thinking it was nature. I don't know. What did you think?
I thought both, really, and I think that his poetry is wonderfully ambiguous, because I thought of all those things. And the fact that he could rhyme bright, white, light, night all in the same sentence and not turn me off, is kind of amazing. Usually if somebody did that in a sentence, I'd be like, really? Would how you, what your thesaurus only has one page? But I go with it. In this song, I go with it. I really do. And it was during this song that I realized, wait a minute, this is danceable rock and roll.
Yeah, yeah.
Next song is July. That's the name of the song. It's a ballad. It's an acoustic ballad. It sounds to me that it's just Terry on guitar. And I have to say, at this point, I was confused. All of a sudden, a ballad like this comes in after the previous two songs. I'm used to a ballad coming in somewhere on a record side, but all of a sudden, it really surprised me. Maybe this is, I have heard criticism that this album isn't very cohesive. Maybe this is what people are talking about. I think somebody else mentioned sometimes this was a little hard to get your head around, this album.
I kept listening to it and I'm going, I've heard this all before. You know, what's interesting about the cohesiveness is it starts out strong. Silver White Light takes it down a notch and July takes it down even further. Yeah. And then the next song brings it back up.
It takes me off guard a little bit. I'm a little confused as I'm listening to it. And I don't mean that as a negative criticism. He really does use, in all of his songs, quiet, kind of vulnerable sounds, and then contrast it almost in the next breath with this huge, expressive voice that's kind of grand and almost a little dangerous. The other thing in this song is he's got this guitar bridge, and it's like, holy smokes, it's like jazz.
It's like Django Reinhardt.
Yeah.
Al DiMeola, John McLaughlin, and Paco de Lucia album, Friday Night in San Francisco, and with the guitar pop when he slaps the guitar.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know we keep saying it, but 17, 18 years old.
It's my favorite song on the album.
Oh, really?
I think so. It's the one I listened to over and over the most. I thought it was so beautiful.
And I assume, I mean, I took it to, I'm so sorry, Deanna.
I'm so sorry. No, I just.
I'm so sorry.
Some of the imagery with the colors and changing. All of a sudden, I had this image of like them, these two teenagers making love out in Sedona, Arizona or something with the red and the different. I don't know why that came to mind. I guess it was, but the colors he's talking about, I thought it was beautiful.
You know, there is a through line for this album. And we'll get into it a little bit, but it's like the 14-year-old. I'm in love with the 14-year-old. We're under the moon. It's July. We're hanging out. We're just marking time. Oh, you're going to leave. Oh, stay with me. Don't leave. Let's go on a road trip. We're going to be friends. And then maybe I'll just leave. And you know what? Speak now or forever hold your peace. And you know what? This has all been such a great thing. I think I've got the rich kids blues. I really think there's a total through line for this album. I jumped ahead big time, but I think the story of the album is really quite fantastic. It's a relationship album. What do I know?
That was great.
That was fantastic. That was fantastic.
I mean, it's kind of all in the, and today I kind of went through the songs and the lyrics because I had a week off from being in California and I didn't get a chance to listen to this and I'd forgotten the stuff and how it is. And I went through and I read all the lyrics again and I listened to the music and I was like, oh my God. And that takes us into marking time, which, like I said, I was just in San Francisco and I kept hearing the trolley car in this song, actually, the cable car. And just after the 3-minute mark, a 40-second drum solo to end the song. Call me anything, call me a fool, call me what you want, but darling, just stay cool. Just stay cool. He's talking about the 14-year-old in the first song. Just stay cool, just stay cool, just stay cool. That's the end of the song. This is a part of the story that we're on, which takes me into stay cool, which takes me into number 5, which is stay with me, baby.
Stay with me, baby. And wow, that was great. Originally,
yeah, that was really good.
Yeah.
I got to say, though, just before we move on to that, to end a song with a crazy classic rock and roll drum solo like that was amazing.
But I think it's the relationship having problems because he's like, please stay with me, don't leave. Bang, 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 bang. You know, it's great. The three of the band, you know, it's just great.
I'm blown away by that. That was excellent, Mac. No, it's wonderful. And yeah, number 5, it going into Stay With Me, Baby. originally recorded by Lorraine Ellison, written by George David Weiss and Jerry Ragavoy. Again, the voice, the super lungs on this guy. It's incredible. It's a great sad love song. You know, I guess I'm partial to Ellison's recording of this. And maybe there's something there that I'm trying to be conscious of, but I'm unconscious of it coming from a woman's point of view, as opposed to a man's, for this kind of please stay with me kind of a thing, love gone wrong. But it's also the production of this song. And so going back to what Mac was saying earlier about some of this, I've heard it before, and I don't know if that's what he meant, but for me, some of it was, yeah, I've heard this before. I love what Terry is putting together here. I dig it, but other versions, it hits me more. This is one of those songs. I think it's great, but it wouldn't be my go-to.
This song was a huge hit. It's like, don't leave. And the way he screams, stay with me, baby, is so good. You said you'd never leave. I can't believe you're going to leave. His voice on this is so brilliant. Like, you can hear him hurting when he's screaming the stay with me, baby. It's so good. Sorry, I didn't listen to the other versions of it because I just got stuck on this with the story that I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And now that you have, this is another reason why I love doing this with you guys. Now that you went through all of that and explained that, what you found, I'm going to go back to this and listen to them all again with that in mind. I learned something about this album just having you say that. So thank you.
The Lorraine Ellison version is pretty amazing. And there's an orchestra behind it, and it has sort of a grand feel to it. And I think that they are also trying to give it a grand feel, even though it's only three guys. But the one thing I wanted to say, that Joey Ramone knew the Lorraine Ellison version and said, I would have stayed.
That's great. That's great. Love that.
Number six.
So the sixth song is a cover of Highway 61 Revisited.
A cover?
/ Friends. So it is Bob Dylan's Highway 61 Revisited. Bob Dylan's version has five verses, and basically it's five different situations where somebody has a problem, and the way to solve it is go out on Highway 61. The first two verses happen in Terry Reid's version. To me, it's a classic Chicago blues shuffle with a really powerful organ leading the way. I mean, it really does rock out, but I do hear a certain sense of foreboding. And then all of a sudden, two verses in, the song starts fading out. And it's like, oh, that's a short song. And then all of a sudden, this other thing happens where there's this song within the song. And it's a song called Friends, which is positive and upbeat. I could see maybe, you know, Up With People doing this song. It's an ode to friendship that's very positive and upbeat. And then Highway 61 comes back again for two verses. It's like, what the heck is going on? I was so wonderfully confused.
It's an 8-minute song, just like you said, Tats. Highway 61, Friends, and then Highway 61. I love how the drums come in on one side of the beginning, and then all of a sudden, they're in both. It's like the drums are in the car and you're standing on Highway 61 and the car is going by with the two of them in it, and it drives up to you, and then the song starts. And then when it goes into Friends, it's the opposite speaker and then both. And then when it goes back into Highway 61, it starts on the left speaker again and does it. So it's very cool the way it's super sneaky. I thought it was great.
And it's a great blues version of Highway 61, I think.
I don't know why they didn't use this for the TV show Friends. I've just never...
I enjoyed this actually more than Dylan's version. But that could be because I've listened to Dylan's version so many times that I'm like, okay, I've listened to that a million times. And this was so unique and it was just so much fun.
And also, like, when Highway 61 comes back, he sings one of the verses, but it's not the lyrics.
Right.
He does basically his own version of the one where it's, you know, King asking, how come my daughter has such pale skin? I mean, that's the Dylan, but, you know, he's doing it but without Dylan's words. His own, he's making up Dylan. Funny.
That's called a little bit of improv-ing, kind of, but not.
Numero 70 is Mayfly. And I'm going to keep with this thing that I'm saying of these two people are together. Whoever he's singing about, it's not working out. They have to travel somewhere. And now they're becoming friends. And it seems like now that they're back being friends, the love interest has come back together, but it's not good. So Mayfly is a very Rod Stewart sounding song to me. It's nice. It's very lyrical, kind of like a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song. It's not harmonies. It's just Terry. And then this huge burst of energy, this voice. This song is a leaving song. One of the last lyrics in it is, I'll send back the case when I can find a place to put it down. The singer is the Mayfly. So Terry is the Mayfly. I'm leaving. I'm going to go. We can talk more about this song, but we can also just pop into the next one because it's like, I'm leaving and then speak now or forever hold your peace.
So it does go into that, speak now or forever hold your peace. It's a great song. I bet it would be so much fun to go and dance to live. That's what I kept thinking when I was listening to it, that seeing it live and jamming out and that they would have so much fun on stage doing this, because it is. It's kind of like, I'm on, I'm going, say what you got to say, but you've kind of lost your opportunity. The ship has sailed. The guitar grooves with the organ is so upbeat. The whole idea of being entangled with people that you shouldn't be and how that has pulled you and is pulling you one way or the other. This whole album being about relationships and whatnot, it's something that sticks to and then goes through into the next song.
I totally hear John Kay and Steppenwolf with the organ right before the second verse. I was like, oh my God, wow, there it is. And I've seen Steppenwolf live. Like, it was deja vu today when I listened to it. I was like, oh, wow.
That sounded a Christopher Walken wow. Like a wow.
I had a similar experience listening to it again today. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is almost a foreshadowing of those kind of grand rock organ groups like Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Electric Light Orchestra, Blue Oyster Cult, even Bachman Turner Overdrive, this grand rock and roll thing that really wasn't happening yet in such a big way. Although now that you mentioned Steppenwolf certainly was doing that.
Well, yeah, Steppenwolf was this time right in the mix of this.
Yeah.
But you could also say Big Brother and the Holding Company was part of this, I think. Jimmy.
I definitely thought of them. Yeah. Terry was talking about seeing Jimi Hendrix play and that he set the bar super high and that who he was talking to, I forget who it was, but the person was like, we need to clean up our table because all the guitar players are crying over there because now they have to raise the bar because Jimi Hendrix comes on stage and is like, oh, hey, like super like, oh, I'm really happy to be here. You know, I'm going to play this song I know you guys would like, you know, Wild Thing, you know, and he just tears it up. And then takes his guitar and leaves, you know, and they're all shit. Oh, my God.
It was a club in Los Angeles, and Mick Taylor was sitting with everybody. Mick Taylor is the person that replaced Brian Jones in the Rolling Stones, great guitar player, and also very good friends with Terry Reid, supposedly. So all these guys are at a table, and Mick Taylor walks over to Terry Reid's table and says, listen, you're going to have to move because we've got to move from our table. Our table is flooded because all these guys are crying so hard.
Right.
It's so good.
So the next song and last song is called Rich Kid Blues, which I think this might be my favorite on the album. It seems like these last two songs are kind of, to me, at least stylistically, of a piece. They are a little bit more raucous and higher tempo. I really dig this song. I hear two different meanings in Rich Kid Blues. One of the meanings is to me that, okay, the kid's rich and everything is cool because he's got money, but his heart can still be broken by a failed love affair. The other meaning I take is because this character is rich, his life isn't fulfilling, so he's got the Rich Kid Blues. I feel like both of these meanings kind of intertwine. One thing I do like is that whatever it is, the character in the song does seem to have awareness that he's a privileged person, but he's got the blues.
Now, hold on for a second.
Please.
He says he thinks he has the rich kid blues. He doesn't say he has the rich kid blues. He says, I have friends, I have this, I have that. I think I have the rich kid blues. I don't think he's a rich kid. I think he's a middle class. Like, they're rolling around going on road trips. Why did they go on this road trip? I mean, if you go with the story of the album. And so I'm thinking he's like equating himself. He's trying to tell us something. He's like, I'm wealthy in this, that, and the other. I'm not a rich kid. I think I have rich kid blues, which was interesting to me because it kept saying think and think.
Yeah.
Think, as opposed to I got the rich kid. I was like, I think I got the rich kid blues. And I was like, that's crazy. And like the Joe Cocker sound of his, I think you might be off a little, Bill, only because of that word. And it kind of tweaked me. He's like a lower middle class guy, you know, that lost his girlfriend or whatever, you know, because the way that they talk about it in there, it's like, was our love worth it? Was it worthwhile? I think so. I think I've got the rich kid's blues because I had such a good time with you and I've got friends and I got a little bit of money. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know what's accurate and I don't really care. But what I do know is I like your interpretation of a shitload. I really like
it. I really do too.
Fucking great.
But it's through the whole album. And I would love to kind of talk to him about this album and go, is that, you know, how people used to make albums? It was a story. Unless it's like, you know, The Point by Harry Nilsson. That's a real story, which is actually, we should totally do that fucking album. That is one of my favorites. One of my favorites. Anyway. Straighter than narrow.
He really knows how to use his voice. Contrast between loud and forceful and intense, and contrast it with the quiet, slow. I buy it, you know, I go with him on it. I don't feel like it's a trick, even though it might be a trick. He really does it. And musically, it does that too. But boy, what you said, Deanna, how fun would it be to see this live and dance?
Right?
It looks like he only tours in the UK.
Yeah, it looks like it. He's touring right now. He's playing somewhere tonight. Yeah.
He's an incredible musician, artist, songwriter, singer, and a damn good guitarist. And his story breaks my fucking heart. It really does, because you have someone who's so incredibly talented. I think about a lot of the folks, like, it's like, hey, what happened to that actor, right? And then fill in the blank with a name. I haven't seen him in a movie in decades. Did he quit acting or, you know, become an alcoholic or whatever the thing is? And it turns out that the person started doing theater instead. But if it's not on IMDb or Netflix, they don't know about it. A lot of folks don't go to theater or pay attention. And
so many of them are closing down. It's like, what?
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Somebody was telling me about it. It was Family Feud. And they said, how many acts are in a play? And somebody was like, six. Like, in a current play, six, they said. And the next person goes, five. Guys, what are we talking, Shakespeare here? No, people don't have a clue about the theater. They are fucking stupid about it. And that's why it's dying. I mean, it'll never die, but that's why there's no money in it. Nobody can sit for 2 hours for a two-act play.
It blows my mind, and it pisses me off. And unfortunately, I've caught myself doing that shit. Oh, I haven't seen that actor in forever. What happened to them? Then you go on. Oh, okay. They decided to say, you know, I want to do theater. I want to go back to theater because I like doing it better, you know. But that's... it's kind of the same. It's like, but you think about the choices that we make in life and how that affects whatever roads that you end up taking, and why someone like Terry, I didn't know who he was. No, the three of us didn't know. It's an incredible talent. And I'm so thankful that you said to listen to this album, Tats.
It sure seems like there is a life lesson in the way he's lived his life, because from everything that I've read about his current or the recent past, the last 5-6 years, is he's not bitter. He feels grateful for the life that he did have. I did read this quote. He doesn't even have any animosity towards Mickey Most, which is really incredible. Because if you think about what that guy did, he was vengeful against an 18-year-old kid. A kid.
Money.
But it seems like Terry Reid has really risen above it. And I went online and I found one of the places that he was playing just this past week in England, and it looked like a school cafeteria or a social club, and it seems like he's okay.
You know what, Bill? I think if someone asked you to do a show and it was in a restaurant, we'd do it.
Yeah.
I've done that. I did it all for art.
One thing that he did say about Jimi Hendrix, I believe, is that the business killed him. You hear people talking about how the music business is a business and the business aspect of it is horrible. Oh. Stomps you and kills your soul. These guys, gals, they're not nice people.
No. And, I mean, it's exactly what we're dealing with right now with the strikes.
Right. Terry Reid, you are a great musician. I'm going to listen to more of the albums, and you're a great life lesson. I wish I could talk to you.
Right? I did want to say, though, just one quick thing is that about show business, my dad used to always say that if someone is going to go into show business, they have to have enough love for two people, because you may love show business, but show business is never going to love you back.
Our last album of season one was The Dead Milkmen, Quaker City Quiet Pills, and started watching The Dead Milkmen's YouTube cast that they do. They started in the pandemic, and they do this thing called recommendations at the end of their podcast. The podcast is called Big Questions with The Dead Milkmen, and I thought it was pretty good. So we're going to try it out now. Recommendation.
There's a podcast called Blind Kids Life. There is a young gentleman, he's about 10 or 11, okay, and he is blind, and he is one of the hippest little cats I've ever met in my life. In my job, I ride a school bus with him. His name's Hao Wen, and if you go on wherever you get your ear candy, this kid's podcast, Blind Kids Life, he'll take you on a tour of the Louis Armstrong Museum. He'll talk about what it's like to be blind and do different things. And he's describing it to me and saying, you know, at the end, it's any blind kid can do anything that seeing kids can do. With that inspiration, I pass that along to everyone else. So if you know someone who would want to listen to this, I think it's great just to listen to it regardless. I love it.
I'm not quite sure how we're going to top that, Deanna. That's pretty good.
Well said. I've listened to it. I enjoy it too. My recommendation is Lucinda Williams' new album, Stories from a Rock and Roll Heart. I saw Lucinda Williams last Friday, and it really was amazing. You know, she had a stroke a couple years ago, and she can't play guitar anymore, but she certainly can sing. It's really wonderful. And if you get a chance to see her, I recommend it, because she talks a lot about the inspirations for the song. One funny thing regarding what the podcast we just did, there's a song on this album called Hum's Liquor. It's a song written about a guy who comes to the liquor store every morning at 10 o'clock. And that person was Bob Stinson, Tommy Stinson's brother. Both of them started The Replacements. That's what got me thinking about Tommy Stinson. And that's why I Googled Tommy Stinson. And that's how I found this album. So it was actually a song from Lucinda Williams' new record.
Nice. I've got the new novel by Stephen Wright, the stand-up comedian, called Harold. It's extremely hilarious. It is about a child. The back of the book says he smiled, thinking the world was such a fascinating, interesting place, and all he or anyone had to do to enjoy it was to be awake. It's pretty great. I've seen Stephen Wright live. He's wonderful. So that was episode one for season two. Way to go, guys. Like, very fucking cool. Deanna? You want to roll us into episode dose?
This is very exciting. I just want to say I'm proud of you guys and myself. Yay! The pick for next time, The Tiger Lilies. The album is Edgar Allan Poe's Haunted Palace, and it's from 2017.
Today is October 19th, 2023. Excellent. Guys, It's great to see you again.
It's wonderful to see you too, Boo Boo.
You guys milking cows? What's going on over there?
I'm milking myself. Okay, people, that's a wrap.
Thanks for listening to the Wax Chatty Podcast.
If you enjoyed it, please leave us a comment.
And absolutely rate us wherever you get your ear candy.
And share this dude with your homies.
We would love to hear your thoughts.
Be nice now.
We look forward to chatting about our next selection.
Stay tuned.
Good night, John Boy. Good night, John Boy.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, John Boy.